Increase in people seeking asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border has led to overcrowded immigration facilities, a loosening of COVID-19 safety rules, and minors being held for longer than the legal standard of 72 hours. It's the latest increase in numbers for the country's asylum system, which currently has a backlog of more than 1 million cases waiting to be ruled on by immigration courts. Our next guest oversaw the last major reform of the asylum process. She says that streamlining it and working more closely with Central American countries can help get the system back on track. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the current situation at the border and about how claiming asylum works in the first place? Are there changes you would like to see? Does the answer lay in doing more to process claims or making it harder for people to arrive and make those claims in the first place? Have you or someone in your family been granted asylum? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Doris Meisner is a senior fellow and director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute. She was commissioner of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service from 1993 to 2000. She's also a native of Wisconsin. Doris, thanks a lot for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's start with what's going on the border now, this increase in the number of minors, unaccompanied minors seeking asylum. What do you see driving that those numbers right now?
Well, those numbers are being driven by a couple of things. Primarily, they're being driven by conditions in the countries that these young people are coming from. Those countries are primarily Honduras and Guatemala, but also El Salvador, the Northern Triangle countries, as they're known, of Central America. Those are countries that have very poor economic prospects, but they also are, for these young people, very dangerous places to grow up because of gangs and cartel violence and young people, particularly young men, being recruited into the gang life as they become teenagers. But these are countries also that suffered two back-to-back very destructive hurricanes in November that decimated large areas of the country and destroyed livelihoods and homes. And there are also countries, Guatemala in particular, where climate change has begun to really create drought conditions that's intensified hunger in the country and has made coffee, which is one of the main agricultural products that have succeeded in Guatemala, has made the coffee crop really suffer. So there are a host of reasons, but of course, they're also combined with the fact that many people in those countries have connections in the United States. They have family members in the United States, or people from communities that they grew up in who are in the United States. And so the tradition of coming north is one that then becomes an option when you have those very difficult conditions in the home countries.
Now, we've just had a change of presidential administration, definitely at least in the way that President Biden has framed the issue, definitely different than President Trump. Some people have said that's been seen as an invitation for people to seek to cross the border now as opposed to, say, last year. Is there anything to that?
Well, of course, last year was the COVID. Well, it still is the COVID year, but last year is the year that the COVID restrictions went into place on the southwest border, on the U.S.-Mexico border, and that it's referred to as the CDC order, which required all people to be expelled, and which also extended into Mexico and these Northern Triangle countries. So there was very little movement anywhere in the hemisphere last year. The year prior to that, of course, 2019, was one of the peak years of migration, particularly, again, of young people from Central America. So it was halted for a while by the pandemic. But these numbers were increasing beginning last fall, and it was quite clear that the numbers were going up gradually. There then was a court injunction that prevented the United States from expelling people into Mexico. So numbers really increased in October and in November. And then at the end of January, when that court action was lifted and the government was allowed again to return people, young people, to Mexico, the Biden administration decided that where minors were concerned, it was simply as a matter of pure humanity, not responsible and not humane to return people who are minors back to Mexico. But it maintained the return of all other groups of migrants that those expulsions under the public health order have continued to Mexico. So, yes, the policy did change in at the end of January under President Biden, where minors are concerned, but the buildup, the signs of the buildup had been happening for months before that time.
Dr. Doris Meisner from the Migration Policy Institute, former commissioner of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service, looking at the latest news from the border and long-term solutions. And Doris, before we get into some long-term solutions you're looking for, right now that decision to not send kids into Mexico is creating this logistical crisis, I think is a fair word, where these kids are going to stay. Do you have thoughts on short-term solutions to that immediate problem?
Well, yes, I think that it is the case that the Biden administration just coming into office did know and did expect that the numbers would go up because they were going up already. But I don't think anybody expected that they would increase so quickly within just a few weeks, because these really are unprecedented levels for January and February. January and February typically in prior years have not been as, you know, the numbers have not been as large as they have been over the last 2 months. So the difficulty, of course, is, as you say, the logistics of preparedness. And the preparedness is complicated by COVID because facilities for holding people have been have dropped because of space and staff considerations. But it's also true that now there is a very serious problem of throughput. In other words, the facilities available that are shelters and appropriate for young people are in shorter supply than the numbers that are coming into the hands of the Border Patrol. And so there's this backup where people are being held in Border Patrol facilities that are simply not suited for any kind of longer term stay, and certainly not suited for young people. You know, the basic pattern at the Southwest border for which the Border Patrol's facilities have been designed are turnaround. I mean, people stay in Border Patrol custody for just a few hours or overnight, and typically then are returned to their country or to Mexico. That's not the case where minors are concerned, because minors have a different, they're under a different legal structure, and they are permitted to have their cases heard by asylum officers. But in order for that to happen, they are, whenever possible, released into the care of relatives in the United States or other sponsors. You know, it's a very telling number. These young people that are coming across now, 80% of them have a relative in the United States. And half of those relatives that are in the United States are either one or both parents, which goes to the bigger issue of how outdated and ill-suited our immigration laws are to the circumstances of the migration that's taking place today. If we had updated immigration laws in ways actually that this administration is proposing, we would have a situation where the people who are already in the United States but have been here for so many years illegally would have an opportunity to legalize their status, and they would then be able to petition for their relatives to come to the U.S. legally. But that doesn't exist, nor do we have the kinds of access to the United States for jobs for people who want to work, who could make useful contributions in our economy, that would make it possible for people in countries like Central America to get a visa to come to the United States for work purposes. So all of those things together create this situation where the asylum system is the only access or the only avenue. Unfortunately, most of these people will not be eligible for asylum, even when their claims are heard, because the asylum definition is a strict one. You have to be able to show the likelihood of suffering persecution for reasons of race, religion, national origin, political opinion, or membership in a social group. Those are the five grounds, as they're known. And even though the people coming from Central America, both the minors as well as adults and families, are escaping dreadful circumstances, that doesn't automatically translate into their being eligible for asylum under the legal definitions for asylum.
We're talking to Doris Meisner, senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute, former head of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, about the challenges facing the country's asylum system and what to do about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what we're seeing at the southern border and how the asylum system works? What kind of solutions would you like to see? What questions do you have for our guest? 800-642-1234 is the number, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Doris Meisner, former commissioner of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, looking at the country's asylum system and how we can maybe rethink it to meet the current demand at the southern border. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. We'll go to your calls now. Ray is with us in Milwaukee. Ray, hello.
Hi, I just have a question about the quota system. There are people all around the world that need asylum. There are people in the inner city of Milwaukee that need to run away from violence and whatnot. Letting all these people in from Latin America just because they're closer to us than, let's say, a refugees from Yemen or from Libya or from Iraq or Syria, like, we don't hear anything about saving any of those people, but just because you are able to walk to our border, now we're letting in all these people from Latin America. Does that mean that fewer people can come from these other countries, which are in far worse shape than Latin Right. America?
Ray, thanks a lot for the call. Doris, that's asylum versus the refugee system, two different, as I understand it, channels of immigration. But is there something to what Ray's saying? More people coming in from Central America means fewer opportunities for people elsewhere in the world.
Well, actually, no, it is not a direct trade-off at all. These are two separate streams or two separate methods of humanitarian protection that the U.S. provides. Now, where the refugee program is concerned, and countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, and I certainly agree with the caller that the needs in those parts of the world and many other areas are acute as well. The refugee program and refugee resettlement that the United States does was, of course, during the last 4 years, severely reduced. I mean, the U.S. has been one of the biggest refugee resettlement countries in the world, but over the last 4 years, those numbers were reduced to less than about 15,000. The Biden administration has committed to ramping up refugee admissions from abroad. It is targeting 125,000 refugees a year. That probably won't be the case this year because it takes some time to ramp back up to that number. But the role that the United States plays in overseas refugee admissions will resume after the break that we've had, as I said, in the last couple of years. But that is a parallel track to people seeking asylum when they already have gotten to the United States. However, it is absolutely the case that walking to the United States should not be something that we see in our hemisphere. It should not be something that would be acceptable to us, particularly in the case of highly vulnerable people like young people and families with young children, whether or not they are ultimately eligible for asylum. We should have what's generally thought of as safe, legal, and orderly immigration procedures. And that, of course, is one of the longer-term proposals that the Biden administration is making, which is to say that the Biden administration is looking to provide opportunities for people to apply for asylum from the countries of Latin America, just as one would from Syria or from Iraq, so that if there were refugee admissions and the opportunity for people who truly are fleeing life-threatening dangers to get protection closer to their homes, either from processing within the countries, which has been done in the past and this administration is seeking to reactivate, as well as by neighboring countries, Costa Rica, Panama. We should have a regional system where not only the United States, but also Canada, Mexico, other countries participate. Now, there is some recent news that the discussions between the United States and Mexico along those lines might also bring about other places for people who are fleeing the Northern Triangle countries and have legitimate claims to get help. The Mexican definition for asylum is a less stringent one than the U.S. definition, and Mexico is also a country that will begin to have opportunities because of changes in its demographics for people to come from neighboring countries for work purposes. So one would also want to see Mexico being a participant as the next near country in providing protection, as well as having a healthy immigration program for employment-based immigration, just as we should be having in the United States.
And Doris, part of this involves clearly cooperation with the countries of origin here, the three Northern Central American countries you referenced. Do we have willing and able partners in those governments, given the circumstances in their countries that are already driving people to want to leave?
Not entirely. I mean, the aid and assistance programs that the Biden administration is talking about will largely go through community and non-governmental groups rather than the governments. These are governments that are really beset by corruption and issues of citizen safety, so they are not the most amenable governments to work with. On the other hand, they are struggling democracies, and there are forces within those countries that are committed to the rule of law and are committed to reform. And what we need to be doing, and in what the Biden administration, I believe, intends to do over the longer term, is engage the sectors of those societies, civil society sectors, as well as certain parts of the business community, to really invest in and create opportunities in those countries. Those are longer-term endeavors, and they will take a real combination of carrots and sticks, which I believe we'll see more of, but those are the kinds of efforts that need to begin to kick in order to change the conditions that are creating these migrations.
Another piece of the puzzle, Doris, I want to talk about before we run out of time. We came into this year, I understand, with about a million case backlog in the asylum system. What do you see needing to be done to expedite things, move things along faster? And so that means for that asylum seeker, they might be accepted in the United States faster, or they might get a resolution that says no a lot faster. Either way, I think people would like to see both of those outcomes happen in a more timely way.
Yes, I completely agree with that. We have a system that is broken with that kind of a backlog. The fact that it takes years for people to get their decisions contributes to the reasons that people come to the United States. So we need to be making asylum decisions within months, not within years. And I think we will probably see some change where that's concerned. I hope we see some change where that's concerned in this administration as well. we could be making those decisions by asylum officers rather than by immigration judges. Asylum officers are highly trained, and they make similar decisions for asylum cases that arise in other parts of the country. It's a quirk in our law that people who come across the southern border are to see an immigration judge, but that could be changed with a regulation. So another goal that's extremely important is an asylum decision system, hopefully using very well-trained asylum officers to make decisions within a few months. And then, as you say, those who are deserving of protection will get it and can be on their way. Those who are not, and unfortunately it likely is to be the majority, will need to be returned to their countries and hopefully connected with some greater degree of support services in those countries through the broader assistance that the United States and others would be giving to help those countries to succeed as countries.
And very briefly, Doris, that streamlining process, can a president do that, or does Congress need to be involved?
A president can do that through the regulatory press, through publishing regulations.
Doris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Nice to talk to you.
You too. That's Doris Meisner, senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. She served as commissioner of the Immigration and Naturalization Service from 1993 to 2000. She's also from Wisconsin. She joined us to look at the demand facing the country's asylum system and what changes could help it start working through a big backlog of cases.